Good one. That's a real good one.
That was better than I expected.
Welcome back to another episode of the Lookout Podcast. I'm back up here at Sula Peak and joined by the Sula Peak Lookout, Sam Vaughn.
Happy to be back.
Thanks for coming, dude. Or thanks for letting me come to you.
Thanks. Yeah, I appreciate it every time. Love hanging out.
That's always a great time, and it's kind of a nice way to end the season. It seems like we always kind of do it towards the end. And, surprisingly, it's not that smoky for August.
Don't say that loud.
I know, it's too early. August 21st is today. I'll be trying to get this podcast out like tomorrow or maybe this evening, depending on how much time I have. But there's some background for folks who didn't see the previous podcast. And Sula Peak is in southwest Montana, north of Salmon, Idaho, actually, to kind of bring it in without sending a bunch of people your way.
They'll come anyways.
That's true.
Yellowstone is filmed like right outside my window. So.
That is. I don't blame it. It's so damn beautiful.
It is pretty. I do feel bad, though. I get a lot of people showing up who, you know, where's the train station? And I'm a jackass, so I'm like, there's not a train around here for miles.
Oh, I know. Because well, I think the train station's supposed to be like right down there.
I mean, it is, apparently. I do know better now, and I'll try to point folks in the right direction. But I haven't seen the show, so I was completely ignorant for a little while. And it's right off the big pull-off, right at the bottom of the mountain road on the highway.
Yeah,
supposedly it's right there.
Yeah, because one time I came up here, I think it was the last time we did a podcast, and it was said, like, welcome to Wyoming sign, like, right before the turn or right after. And I'm like,
excuse me?
I'm like, whoa, man, that was a long day of work, but I don't think I made it to Wyoming today.
This week's been a long month.
I was like, man, I'm so confused. I got up here, I was like, checking my watch. I think I even asked you. I'm like, where am I? I'm in Montana still, right?
Did I go too far?
Yeah, that was kind of a late night podcast, I think. It was dark when we started that one.
Yeah, I think, we've got kind of a split right now. So the two that we did, and including the one with Tyrell. Sorry. All right, let me try that again. Two that we've done. One with just me, and one where Tyrell was here as well. That was late when you first got here. Sorry about the radio. That's going to be happening for the next 2 hours at least.
Yeah, you never know. So we did three total, right? Because there's James.
Yep.
You and James. You and Tyrell. And then you solo, right? Mm-hmm.
So two of those so far have been late. The one with Tyrell, I remember, was also a late one.
It was really late, yeah.
And then the one with James was kind of akin to today.
Yeah, I think it was real similar because I remember being a little like hot towards the beginning, and then like I having big brains on like you and Tyrell and James. I'm like, this one's I'm more relaxed for because I've known you now for like 3 years, right?
At least
2 years.
Yeah,
as long as you've been up here, I think pretty much. And so I'm a little more relaxed, and you know, we're buddies, and it makes it easier. But before, I felt like a responsibility to ask good questions because I had good brains on. So I was like, I need to make sure I'm not just asking like, you like outside? Me too. You know, like those
big
kind
dirt
of questions.
Good.
Yeah,
big dirt, real good.
Big dirt. Yeah, exactly. Those kind of questions, man. Because it's you know, I feel like it's how my brain works. You know, years of fire. So
yeah, and I mean, I don't think there's anything wrong with that though. There's absolutely a time and a place. Those two, if I had to pick two of my friends who you were going to ask questions like that of. Absolutely, those guys.
Yeah.
I love those guys. They're both very bright.
They are. And so well spoken and real patient, you know. And if I was kind of, I think they could kind of suss me out too to be like, oh, so I think you're trying to get at this? It's like, yep, that's exactly what it is, you know. Trying to ask you questions because James is an archaeologist and Tyrell is just a really smart human.
Yes.
Is he back in school?
So he is back in school, I think. Don't quote me on it, but I think he might be pursuing a chemistry degree now.
Oh, yes, sir.
To be one of the things that's available and kind of akin to what he was going for. But since he's stuck in Billings, he's like, this is the best that I can do right now.
Yeah,
so.
It's probably like the highest degree that you can get there. He was going into like neuroscience, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I mean, the man is very smart, and he juggles his kind of side hustle is writing, and he's a very good writer, and he does that all the time.
Yeah, I keep forgetting about that because that was going to be on our follow up because I forgot to ask him about it in our first one. And then, because for folks who haven't listened to that podcast, Tyrell used to be TP Point Lookout for many years, and that is almost due east from where we're sitting here, heading, you know, in the eastern Montana. But I mean, still on our forest, so not that far, but just in that as a crow flies, I guess, is heading east.
Mm-hmm.
I made that way more complicated than usual. But
it's east. It's behind you guys where you're watching right now.
That's kind of nailed it. Yeah, because I'm like,
got you, buddy.
A lot of beauty back there. Is it the Pintlers are back there? Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pintler Anaconda Wilderness.
Oh, it's a great spot.
That place where no one's going to fight fires.
Yeah. Ooh, yeah. No one even really wants to there.
No.
Man. That one fire that was there, oh, I think it was a year before I came, before I worked in Sula. Were you here for that?
Yeah.
I think Manny was the IC, and like, there was no access to that thing. It's just like,
no.
There it is.
Yeah, and a lot of residents were pissed as, I mean, you get defensive of your home, absolutely. Mm-hmm. But it was to a point where you could kind of ask leading questions to some of the homeowners in the area, where it's like, what are they going to do about that fire? And it's like, oh, yeah, that fire. You've been up there? And they're like, yeah. It's pretty rough up there, huh? And they're like, yeah, it's terrible. There's, you know, there's blowdown shit everywhere. It's really thick. It's really kind of scary to be up in there. I'm like, right.
Right.
So they're like, probably don't want to go fight fire.
No, and that's, yeah, like, those leading questions are some of the best, you know, as long as you're, like, condescending, like, they're...
Yeah.
Because the public sometimes gets so worried, they forget, like, we're humans, too, you know? And, you know, like, especially in the roles that I was getting into before I left fire, was, like, being in charge of other humans, and I'm not going to send humans to their death.
Oh, no. And I think that's, you make a very good point, where it's, like, how to approach that in a, like, a diplomatic sense, right?
Yeah.
Where you want to talk these people down a little bit, but you also want to be like, hey, remember, I'm a person and I don't want to go die in a fire.
Yeah.
That's still miles from your house, just, you know, to put it in perspective.
Yeah, totally. A lot of, especially these local fire resources for folks listening who don't know, are a lot of times your local young kids, I call them. I mean, they're young adults, 18 and up, but like, a lot of them are just trying to pay for school.
Oh, yeah.
So they're busting their hump all summer, and they'll gladly go and you know, risk their lives to fight a fire, and then it's on leadership as myself to be like, no, it's not safe to go in there.
Right.
You know, like, they're like, for the excitement of the job, more money for fighting fire, right. And this is their hunting ground, a lot of it, so they're like, I want to save that too, you know, so they're more than willing to go in there and risk it to put that fire out, so.
You gotta be.
It's not a fear thing, it's
no.
Just a safety issue.
I mean, rookies in pretty much any profession, they will do whatever you tell them to.
Yeah.
For the most part. So don't, you cannot miss that where you don't see a dangerous scenario.
Yeah.
Fire. But I was so lucky. All of the leadership that I had when I was a rookie was very cognizant of, like, that assignment is way too dangerous. We're rejecting that. It's like, and as a rookie, I mean, a gung-ho one, too, who was fresh out of the military, I was like, why? Come on, we could do it.
Yeah.
And looking back, it's like, no, that wasn't safe or smart.
Same, yeah. Cause I was a college athlete, so I could, like, felt like I was, like, in great shape. I'm like, man, I can, if something gets bad, I'll just run away. You know, it's like.
You don't understand.
Not even understanding the risk, you know, like, the noise, the widowmakers, the standing dead, all these things that could come get you. Yeah. And also just get surrounded by flames if you had your head down like I probably would have been, just digging away, trying to put the fire out by myself, you know? And then also getting dehydrated and going TU, you know?
Certainly. Yeah. Yep. That's a lot of factors there that you don't think of. When you're like, I can run fast.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, in like shoes and shorts on a track.
Yeah, that too. Oh, man. I should just have that conversation about man calls because when I was talking to folks from Helena, I was telling them how I'd been there twice, you know, once as a kid with my family, like one of the first big family hikes I remember. And just like the first time in my life feeling like the heaviness and the gravity of like an area. Like, whoa, this is a bad spot, you know, like, and seeing all the grave markers, and also, like, seeing the slope, and being like, holy God, what a horrible slope to be trying to outrun a fire on, you know?
Right.
So then I go back, and when I'm in, like, really good shape, and after my rookie year in 2013, and me and my wife, at the time, his girlfriend, she was a college athlete, too, played soccer and basketball, and so we're in running gear, you know, like, fresh off a nice breakfast in the morning, you know, well hydrated, got good sleep, gonna go, you know, like, hike up Mangalsh and decide to time ourselves, and I think we would have made it. It'd been close, but I think we would have made it.
Mm-hmm.
But like you said, in running shorts, in running shoes,
yeah,
you know, hadn't fought any fire that day, hadn't had the hot plane ride over, you know, and parachute in the ground, and like all of the, and carrying a ton of weight, you know, so it was like, I don't know if I would have made it if it was for real, you know.
Right. And that's, I mean, we can test ourselves on these hills. I mean, Sula Peak is notorious for breaking off new and veteran firefighters. Like, this hill is a tough one.
Yes, deceiving.
Certainly. So we can time ourselves all day in practice, which is good. But the reality is, if you find yourself in a shitty spot, it's probably not right after breakfast, after a good night's sleep.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, for the heat of the day, we've already been working your butt off typically, and you're already dehydrated and kind of behind the curve of hydration.
Certainly.
And probably food, too. You probably haven't had enough fuel that day. And I don't know about you, but like I even today, like on that 8 mile hike, or like 8 miles round trip to Trapper Peak, and man, afterwards, my blood sugar just tanks. Like, my blood glucose level, I can, like, feel it, you know, and I get a little shaky. And
oh, yeah.
So I got to, and I'm not a big, like, chocolate candy kind of person, so, but, like.
Sometimes.
Man, I was craving hard after that hike.
Yeah.
So, luckily, one of my friends, Amanda, she has, like, a little, it's almost like a little snack bucket on her little cubicle. So
hell yeah, dude.
We made that thing when I got back. I was like, oh, man, I'm hurting.
Sometimes you just know what your body needs, too, and sometimes that's Oreos.
Yeah, I know. Like, usually I'm trying to keep all the clean from my crumbs. But
right.
Like, oh, man. Like, but, you know, like, you've been on fire or, you know, probably hard military training where you sweat your butt off and, like, you're behind that curve of, like, blood sugar and you're like,
absolutely
something.
And, I mean, that'll happen to me occasionally if I'm not paying attention to what I'm eating just day to day.
Oh.
And then it all hits me at once and I'm like, I need sugar.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, especially here in Montana, it's kind of hard to get access to like good fruit, so I don't think about it that often. Yeah. And I used to be a big mango guy, especially like one time on our look at that dried mango right there.
Yeah,
what's he got there?
Vitamin C.
Oh yeah,
that's how I try to get around it. But
yeah, right, especially you though. I mean, you're pretty much on an island up here, you know, like, you know, and there's that to the store, I guess it's close. Yeah. Doesn't really have anything.
Not really.
Well, like camping supplies.
Yeah. Things.
That's, otherwise you gotta go all the way to Darby, and then their grocery store isn't the best either. It's just kind of like your basics. So
they close. By the time I'm off work, they close.
Oh.
So, Hamilton.
Yeah. I'm getting like battling some scurvy up here if you're not careful.
Thank God, I've still got all my teeth.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, man. I'm getting a little weird up here. But yeah, like in the lunch, we're getting mangoes and stuff, so I started doing more of that, you know, and like you were eating avocado before, you know, like some of those like good fats and stuff.
Yes.
So kind of learning as you go. It's amazing how resilient your body is when you're young.
It's pretty impressive how much you can get away with when you're 20.
Yeah.
And then a decade later, how little, by comparison, you can get away with. You wake up one day and you're like, I need a gallon of water and to stretch like right now, and then I need to get back in bed.
Yeah,
and I didn't even drink last night.
Yeah, I've had that too. It's like I didn't drink. I didn't go do anything difficult, like physical. Yeah. Like, you know, maybe in the office all day, and then, you know, or I move around a little bit, so it's not like I'm just sitting either.
Sure.
So I'll wake up and be like, did someone kick me in the hamstring? Like, what happened last night? My back will hurt. I'm like, oh man. I didn't do anything, but that's part of it, right? Like, you don't do anything. Like, I noticed that today when I first started hiking. I think I'm starting to build some arthritis in my right knee from an old football injury from high school.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, it feels, like, weak and stiff when I first started off on that hike. And it's a little bit of a pull right from the parking lot, and then it kind of levels off a little bit.
Yep.
But about halfway in, I was, you know, loose, and I actually forgot about it. And on the way down, I was thinking, like, oh, man, I forgot my knee was kind of bothering me when I started this out. And it's because I don't use it. And they always tell you, you know, motion is the body's lotion.
It is.
It totally is. In one of my classes, that's what they talked about. Like, there's all this medication for arthritis. A lot of it doesn't seem to work that great. But if you just stay moving, you know, that's how you stay ahead of it.
Right. And it's tough, that initial pull. We need to go back to the diet thing at some point, though. I do have points. A lot of it, motion is hard, especially when you've been sedentary for a while, when you've been sitting around. One of my favorite stories in the world is, I lost a cousin who was like a brother to me about 5 years ago, which was real tough. But he was a super cool kid. He was like a skater kid. We got on super well as adults, which was like one of my favorite like brother kind of relationships I've ever had in my life. But I remember dragging this poor kid to the gym. And it was like shortly after I got out of the military. Come on, let's go to the gym, man. It's like, fine. And I remember after like a not particularly forgiving back and by day or something like that, I was like, all right, we're doing pull-ups. He's like, what? Why? Let's just leave. It's like, no, come on, let's just do this. And I remember him being pretty pissed about me making us do this, but two, three times of that, and he was doing 10 pull-ups, 15 pull-ups by himself, and he loved it.
Oh, yeah.
And just watching him come out of that, like, a little more sit-down style life. And he wasn't super, like, he liked to ski and skateboard and stuff like that, but as far as, like, lifting, it was breaking him off pretty good
when
he started. But it was cool to see him come out of that and adjust so fast, especially as a young kid.
Oh, yeah. It's so awesome, man. So many people do, like, they're like, well, I'm active, you know, especially, like, skateboarding and stuff, like, why do I need to work out? It's like, it'll help, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You hear so many pro athletes, I think even Sean White, maybe I'm wrong here, but I think he was like, talking about like working out and hitting the weights to gear for half pipe, you know, for the Olympics, was it?
Oh, I'm sure.
I think going for that gold medal. And, I thought I heard him talk about working out as well.
It's absolutely, I mean, it's got to be. I mean, shout out to Mobility Duo on Instagram. They have a ton of like workouts for snowboarders, yoga for snowboarders. Hey, strengthen this if you're a snowboarder. Do this all summer if you're a snowboarder. Like, it's great stuff.
Yeah.
I've done a couple of their workouts and they kicked my ass.
Yeah, I mean, even just our lifetime, too, like, that was kind of like, sports specific, you know, even like hunting specific workouts, like
yep.
That doesn't exist before. Just like, you know, just go hike around and yeah. You know, like
that's the main one.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like why do I need to really work out? But then if you enamel down, it's like packing it up.
Yeah, hello, 250 pound pack.
Yeah, exactly. Oh my god. Yeah, and then
that's why I like to hike with my or hunt with my uncle because he hunts. Almost from his truck.
Oh, and if he's good luck, then, you know, he probably gets spot then, you know, if he's bringing him in. Some people just have good luck. I don't know if they've just been doing it so long when they're driving around and they just kind of know where the elk are going to be moving or deer or whatever. But, yeah, it's like they always fill tags.
He's very much like that. He's got his own little community, too, that he's pretty tight with.
Yeah, it helps. It's kind of good though too, because I know some of the older folks around Whitehall have like their spots, and people just let them be. Like that's, you know, their spot, and they usually get like a cow or something, and that's also what they eat on all year. So it's like it's important. Yeah.
Oh yeah, and I'm happy to help out. Like that goes to the family deep freezer. So.
Yeah, totally, man. I'm right there with you. What were you gonna say about that before we get to?
Okay, so just before we started. When Luke first got here, he actually caught me making dinner, and I didn't time it very well, and I was, like, trying to stuff my face while he's getting set up. But I had a question for you in regards to that. Your diet must be super strict, because I had a moment where I was like, man, I should make this guy something. But it's like, I know that your diet is regimented.
Yeah, it's pretty strict, you know, like, mostly, like, I even lately, sorry, it's, like, a lot of around about, so it's, like, meat and potatoes kind of diet, you know, like potatoes will kind of like if I have too many, it'll start kind of messing up. Or like, I think sometimes if people do like mashed potatoes, they'll do like a heavy whipping cream and a few other things that'll like not agree with me. But if it's just like straight up like mashed potato or like a baked potato, you know, do our just like salt and pepper.
Sure.
And then like try to do a lot of red meats because I don't think I told you, but I just had an iron infusion because I got my levels back. And when I was in college, we took our own hematocrit, which is like the amount of iron you have in your body, and also kind of measures the carrying capacity of your blood cells for oxygen, carrying capacity for oxygen. And so, like the way my professor said, it's like you know, your blood cell, your red blood cell, is like a car and it has seats in it. And it should have like four seats or something.
Sure.
I'm probably off on that, but he's like, you pretty much got one. You got one seat because of how low your hematocrit is. He's like, that's how bad it is. He's like, so you're not even your oxygen carrying capacity is not great. And I was like, I remember even training for smoke jumping, and when I was like in rookie training for smoke jumping, I remember being like, man, I'm in better shape than this. So I think I have like an up and down where like. Like, if I was doing too much exercise, my iron levels would start to dip more.
Sure.
And then, so, like, it's, like, I almost felt like I was getting kind of, like, I was, what do you call it, like, sports asthma?
Oh.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
I think so.
Yeah, because I think my blood cells weren't carrying the oxygen.
Mm-hmm.
And I was still trying to do what I knew I could do. So, it was like, man, I feel like I just can't catch my breath here when I know I should be able to.
Yeah.
I didn't really put that together until like recently because they did all my a big blood panel on me, and
my hematocrit and some other, they call it like ferrous or something like that, or
yeah,
like a ferritin test. And so the ferritin test and the hematocrit and something else, and I could be getting thrown. So apologies for people who know more about this than me. But
we're screaming at home.
Yeah, you idiot.
It's all right, I'm used to it.
Yeah, totally sick. That's my life. But yeah, I was like, one of them was like a 20 to 40 scale, and I was like, 2, and the other one was like 50 to 100 or something, and I was like a 3.
Okay.
So like I was barely on the charts for iron, like such low iron, so I got an iron infusion. To move that back to my diets, so I try to eat a lot of red meat. But then talking to my friend, that's shout out to Sustainable Wellness, Jesse, she was saying that she used to be a swimmer number 2, she's big old brain. She's like, I think yours is more of an absorption issue than I thought. I was like, right. So it's like, even if I'm getting a lot of like an iron supplement, it's gonna be hard. So I'm trying to do some more like beef liver type of.
Oh wow.
Yeah, added it to my diet. So yeah.
You sound so happy about that.
Oh yeah. I mean, they would say how healthy it is. It's supposed to have like a ton of like vitamins and minerals and stuff, and beef liver and really big iron content. So. Well, I'll learn to love it.
Okay, how do you prepare it?
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering. So I'm gonna have to bug her because she does do
like
awesome tutorials on like healthy cooking and eating. She probably still does, but she did this awesome fermentation class last winter. I put it on in Missoula at a few other places, I think. So all about fermenting.
Yeah, that would be super cool.
It's super cool. Yeah, it's so healthy for you. Yeah, it's so good for you, man. She does a lot of stuff with, like trying to like, you know, be smart with your food choices and how to make it kind of affordable. It's great. So like I follow her on all stuff, and then so like chicken, red, you know, meats, like beef and stuff, you know, and wild game. I'm not that great of a hunter, so usually like my little brother supplies me. And then bison too, a lot of bison. Yeah, I really like bison meat.
It
and,
is good stuff.
Yeah. I used to do rice, but even rice started bothering me a little more. And same with noodles, like grains or something. The grainy foods are starting to get me. I was kind of hoping to get into quinoa, like kind of work my way into it, but
yeah.
I don't think I'm ever going to be able to handle those. But Mayo Clinic does have a trial coming up, so
okay.
I'm not totally giving up hope. Yeah, it's like, yeah, like, so like, back to your question, it's pretty strict. I don't have a lot of wiggle room on my diet. I don't have a lot of room for exploration.
Yeah, you weren't kidding. Meat and potatoes.
Yeah, meat and potatoes is pretty much it. Lots of bone broth, some to the above.
So,
and don't smell the radio. I can't really hear somebody getting this mic.
That's fair. I'm more listening.
Oh, I guess my bad.
Oh, it's all right.
Was that anything?
You can show Mod 3 Bravo leaving the South Fork Fire and then route Darby.
I'll just keep moving around.
3 Bravo is local, so.
Yeah, I thought I heard like a, maybe I was just catching bits and pieces of the broadcast this morning, but I thought I heard it's like an Illinois resource or something.
Yeah, we've got a few forest resources currently running around, which is great. The work is here.
Yeah, totally. So, share the love.
Yeah, we've got a ton of starts where the camera is pointed out beyond Shook Mountain. The Bitterroots is our west fork of the Bitterroot River, and man, we had a lighting bust a few days ago, and it's like they got 20 starts. So, yeah.
That's a lot. That's busy.
Yep, the work is here. And on this district, nothing.
Well, yeah.
Johnson Fire. But
oh, yeah.
That's it's like done.
I was going to say, it's not like put anything up. I was looking for it when I first got here.
Sophie sent me a picture. A couple trees.
Oh, okay.
So it's not putting up hardly anything.
Yeah, that's good, man.
Yeah.
McCart's still alive. McCart, look up.
McCart made it.
Woo! And then that picture she took.
That is something, isn't it?
Man, a wall of flames. Yeah. Just, like, licking it.
Yeah, I love that.
That's such a great photo.
Damn, that is awesome.
Yeah, I'm going to talk to her because the FFLA, Forest Fire Lookout Association, was looking at a posted as well. So, keep forgetting. So, my apologies, FFLA. I promise I'll get a hold of her. Yeah. Sure she'll be fine with the bill and make sure.
Oh, I imagine so. I mean, yeah. And if you grabbed her contact info from the roster, I'm sure that'd be fine too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I don't got one. But, yeah. So, I'm curious with that kind of diet, though. Mine is similar to that, but I add, you know, vegetables of all different kinds. And then starches, yeah, I should probably cut down on. But, like, pasta, super good. Tyrell has a recipe for pasta primavera. It's hard to get away from that. And then I started doing fried rice recently.
Fried rice?
And probably not healthy, but damn, I don't care.
Well, it all depends on the oil you put in, too, right?
That's true.
A lot of carbs and fats, depending on what you do it with, but like an olive oil or something like that. What do you fry it in?
Usually a little bit of olive oil, and then I just do soy sauce, a little bit of teriyaki, usually chicken, a bunch of different veggies that I'll saute a little bit prior and then throw them with the fried rice. Crack an egg over all of it, and then a little bit of peanut butter.
Oh, peanut butter. That, I did not expect that. A little bit of curveball when I was... I'd have to warm up that one, I think, but I'll definitely try it, man.
Yeah.
Does it add like a little bit of the old nutty...
It does.
Kind of like a peanut sauce on the tongue.
Exactly, yeah. That's kind of what I was shooting for, and it worked great. Mm. So...
Yeah, I like that a lot, especially the soy sauce. So what I was thinking about that is when we were kids, especially in the 90s, remember the salt was killing everybody, they said? So like everyone was having a heart attack because of salt. And I realized, like, we all probably could use more salt.
Yeah.
You know, unless you're, like, not very active, you know? But, like, I mean, I probably still have salt stains on my face. Hiking
it. Hiking around a bit.
Yeah. Do I have them?
No.
Are you kidding?
Doing good.
Oh, thanks, man.
Yes. Like, give us 10 more minutes in the sun and we'll both be sweating.
Yeah, that'd be good. Just keep it glistening so it looks younger. I'm getting older now, man. Getting closer to 40.
I'm right there with you. Well, I'm not quite close to 40 yet, but...
You're almost 30.
Almost 30?
Yeah, you're still young.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah. For the viewers, for the listeners. Well, I was going to ask you. Actually some of my front loaders with. Usually I don't do this because I just kind of where the conversation goes. And a lot of times people kind of come on the podcast with stuff they already want to talk about. So I just kind of, I feel like sometimes I'm just like the conduit. Like that it's just like, you know, like Larry Lufkin, who I just had on, you know, like amazing histories in the 101st Airborne in Vietnam. So it's just like, you have these stories, man, and I don't know them. So if you just want to like rattle them off and I'll just sit here and like ask questions and enjoy these stories, man, because...
I will keep that in mind for sure.
Yeah, well, like with you, it's just more like a chill conversation. We cover a lot of ground, but so like even with you, I don't front load any questions. It's kind of more like what's kind of happening in the world and wherever this goes. Like, I mean, we talk more about like diet and relationship stuff.
Sure.
But I front load this question was the lookout life. I mean, this being your third year, how's it going? Are you coming back? What's the thoughts?
Yeah, I like it quite a bit. So it is hard to not like this kind of stuff, unless you're a real socialite who needs a lot of human interaction on a day to day. It does edge on unhealthy though, because we are social creatures, even the most hermetic of us. I don't know if I use that right. Even the most secluded of us will need human interaction. But I have found that I enjoy this spectacularly. I talk to a lot of folks, especially in the off seasons. So if I'm up here and I don't see a lot of folks, that's totally fine.
Yeah, a little break.
And then just living out here is so quiet and peaceful, and then I just get an insane enjoyment from it. Being able to hike every day is just fantastic, which honestly has taken a bit of a backseat. I've seen two bears in the last week and a half, I've never seen a bear on this hill.
I haven't seen a bear in this district yet.
So I was like, okay, well, I'm going to probably hang out a little closer to the tower these days. But brown bears, decent size. One was probably 400 to 500 pounds, and then the other looked smaller than that. But it was from a distance. One was in the saddle between here and Jim Hill Rock, and the other was down the road. But it was far enough each time I was like, I don't know how big that is.
Yeah, right, and that's the scary thing. It's usually probably bigger than you think it is, you know?
Could be.
And one situation was picking huckleberries, and I was like, you know, I just like kept... I was kind of just thinking it was like black bear, mm-hmm. and then it's just over by Miller Creek up in Missoula.
Oh yeah, okay.
And well, two different scenarios, and that one like kind of snuck up. That one snuck up, and I was like, not paying attention because I was thinking it was black bear. Not really that worried about it. And then all of a sudden, like, I looked up and it's like, oh, that is way bigger than a black bear. And so like, I slowly pulled back in my truck. And then the other occasion, I was with my dog, and it was coming through the bushes, and we're in more of a wetlands kind of area, so I was thinking, like, some of the fire crew, I just saw a moose up in the same area, so I was like, probably dead moose. Not thinking much of it, just kind of picking away, and I'm only, like, shorts and a cutoff, you know, not carrying bear spray or fire or anything, because I'm smart, and but my truck was, you know, only, like, 10 feet away, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It was just, like, off the road, you know, when I was just down the cut bank there.
Yeah.
And so I'm thinking away. But the only thing I was worried about is, like, you know, my dog's pretty protected, so it's like, if he doesn't like, the bear's there. And so, like, as soon as I saw the bear pop out of the woods, and the bear didn't care about us, it was eating berries too, it
right.
cared less. So I didn't, but I was just worried about my dog provoking it, so I was like, all right, well, we're going, you can have it, you know? So,
that's a good call.
Yeah, like, before my dog really knew what was going on, we loaded up, and my dog also, like, loves huckleberries. He was picking his own as we were going. So he was distracted, never, so... We left. I got enough. I felt a little jar. Mm. Well, I was happy. The bear was happy. We were happy. But it was like one of the deals. It was like, oh wow, that's huge. Like,
yeah.
And I mean, he was probably like 50 yards away. So like, not like dangerously close, but closer than I felt comfortable with.
Yeah, and that was kind of my thing when I was up here. It's like, I could go find out how big you are. I'm not going to do that.
Yeah.
And then I don't want to get caught out between, like, I don't want to be hiking back, and then when I crest this hill, I'm like, there's a bear between me and my house. Cool.
Yeah. Oh, no. Yeah. Not a good thing. It's so fast.
Yeah. Surprisingly.
Yeah. I think I heard something somewhere they run like 35 miles an hour uphill or downhill. Like, it doesn't matter.
God, that's so crazy.
So scary.
That's so ridiculous. I can't get up to 35 miles an hour going uphill on that ATV.
No,
on that steep road.
Yeah, there was a high-speed treadmill that had a harness, you know, that we train on in college, and we do go over-speed training, so
yeah.
We point downhill, and you just run, and then when you couldn't keep up, you just tuck your legs,
yeah.
And you'd be swinging, and then they'd stop it, you right. know. I don't think I got to that fast. I think maybe I was like a 30, you know, maybe.
Yeah.
I can't remember exactly how fast I was going, but it was like...
And that's cooking.
Yeah.
That's so fast.
That would be like running downhill and just... Barely keep my legs in front of you so you don't eat it, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Like, and then probably eating shit and then the bear eating it. How it went down.
Yeah, and unfortunately in that scenario, I think you'd have to find a good spot that hopefully maybe you could hold your ground, maybe, and try to fight it off long enough for it to lose interest. I saw a horrible video, it's been a long time, but this dude hiking, he's on a little ridge that was pretty steep on both sides, and bear pops its head up from around a rock and just immediately attacked it. And he was
there.
Yeah. And he's really lucky. I think he gave it a pretty good kick or something like that, and it fell a ways, but it was pawing at him for a bit, and that, I couldn't imagine.
Yeah, it was like when I first got in a fire, and you may have heard the story, and I think it was a Lucifer hot shot in Yellowstone. They all got charged, and he jumped like a wood pile, but his pack was still on and sticking up. So I think he grabbed him by the pack and shook him and launched him, and then he was able to get under some other deadfalls. I think he was still trying to get at him, but he was like under enough, big enough old tree?
Yeah.
Old tree that it wasn't able to like break through and get him, but that would still be horrible, and I hear the breath is horrible, so I imagine he was getting a full...
Every roar is another nasty breath.
Nice taste of it, the full experience.
Well, berries and meat.
Yeah.
For years.
Yeah. Oh, and here's a crazy story, too. And apologies if I've told this on the podcast before. But I was IC. It was actually the first time I got signed off with an IC4 on this big fire in Elk Park over by Butte, deceased Butte. And probably the same storm that started the fire killed the cow. So it was an IC3 for, I think, a few days. I can't remember, maybe a week. And then I got transitioned down. I took it in the transition. So it's kind of cool. I got to like have a team for a minute.
Yeah.
And all the people here for a while.
One beautiful moment.
Yeah, I made it. And but then like part of that was like, oh yeah, we got this cow and it's too heavy to do anything with, so we just like, it wasn't.
So like a moo cow?
Like a moo cow, yeah, okay. like a black Angus is what it was. Huh. And so it got struck by lightning, just dead.
Whoa.
Not far from where, far enough to where like no one was really worried about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, one of the hotshot crews that was from out of the area was like, yeah, that cow's in a different spot today. And I was like, what? And I hadn't seen the cow yet because I wasn't worried about it. It wasn't near a fire line. And they're like, yeah, like it's moved quite a bit. And like, that dead cow is not it's moved. I was like, show me, you know. So like, the stupid hotshot crew is like, jumps, you know, has me jump in his UTV and roll up there, and I mean, it is like 400 yards or more moved from where it was. A full-grown Angus cow was getting drugged, and you see where it's getting drugged towards the tree line. And I think it was doing it while the soup was coming, and then the soup surprised it and luckily ran off. But it's like, how big of an animal is moving like a 1,000-pound cow or whatever a cow weighs? You know, it's like,
right.
That's some scary stuff.
What a trip, man. I can't imagine the stories you would tell back home after that, where you're like, yeah, I was in charge of this fire. I had to figure out how to move a dead cow as part of my job today.
Yeah.
I had to figure out the logistics for that.
Yeah, so what we ended up doing is, like, getting the local ranch from down the road, had a backhoe, and he came and buried it. It was like, we're just going to let him have it, but it's like, this could be a bad deal. We just said, he might have taken it, like, away from there and then buried it, because they got a hell of a sniffer, you know?
Right.
So, yeah, I think we he loaded it up in the bucket of the backhoe and carried it way off from there.
Luke, I'm going to need 11 guys.
Yeah, exactly. Who's your strongest? Who's feeling healthy today? Oh, man. Yeah, man, they just love rotten stuff. So, like,
right.
That's got to be part of the reason why their breath is so terrible.
I imagine.
All them teeth and no toothbrush.
It's what he's so mad about.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Was that water foot?
Yeah.
Oh, so good, man.
Oh, my God. I haven't seen that movie.
Oh, it's been a long time, too.
Yeah.
Like, that line always, probably because of Human Anatomy, too. You're talking about the Abdullah Oblongata and
yeah.
stuff, you know? I think I butchered that, but.
No, you nailed it.
Did I? Oh, yeah. Most of the while, I get it. Moment, but I ruin it because I'm like, is that right? Like, yes. Or no. And then I have another question. Well, actually, before I do that,
sure.
The loneliness factor being up here, you had a word for it when you said it before, like being over yourself.
Were you like secluded or?
Secluded, yeah, like the secluded like nature of a lookout. And not as social, you know, like especially in the Bob Marshall wilderness, you hear about that.
Oh, yeah.
That is a tough part, dude. Like, I could probably do lookout like at this capacity, you know, in Sula and maybe like Willow and stuff, and having people come up. And eventually, I would like to, you know, when I'm down the road and retired, go do like a Bob Marshall, you know, lookout sometime. I'd have a plan. Either like it'd be like the still doing podcast thing,
yeah.
And I wouldn't want to bring technology, but I'd probably bring like my Starlink so that I could upload a podcast.
I don't see anything wrong with that,
but I want to be getting the full experience, you know, without the technology.
I guess if you're looking for that kind of experience, then yeah. I mean, I've got a computer to my left for those who can't see it. But if you're looking for that full experience, then definitely go for it. I've spent like some time at TP where
the typewriter. You got the fire
there,
going.
There was a minute there where the. God damn, they have like a car battery powering their radio or something like that, and it's not enough to even charge a phone. So after 2 days, everyone's phone's dead, Tyrell's laptop's dead, whatever. It was me and an ex and Tyrell and I think maybe his siblings, and we didn't have nothing because we couldn't charge anything. It was fine. We do fine.
Did you play cards?
Yeah, a few times.
Yeah. I know, that's like, when we go camping, the cards come out. You know, the family. I'm like, yeah, these are good.
Tyrell and siblings visited. There's cards sitting on the alleyway.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
Totally. But yeah, you'll find stuff to occupy your time. He had some old golf club that someone left up there, and pretty soon we're like chipping little rocks off the mountainside and just laughing. Awesome. We were doing stupid stuff, and then you'll hike a bunch, and meals are a thing. Everyone pitched in to like help do dishes or cook or whatever. So I don't know. Life kind of slowed down, but there was nothing terrible about it. But that's with the group. If you were going to go to the wilderness by yourself and look out, I think that would be a little more maddening if you didn't have some kind of intermediate step.
True.
So for me, I feel less stressed about not seeing other humans in my third year after living in Sula for years, after being a lookout for a few. If a week goes by and I don't see anyone, I'm not really like itching to see anyone, but it does help that I've got a cell phone that I can text people.
Yeah, totally.
So that might be a difference if you don't have service or anything like that. But I think with the experience that I have going to the wilderness, not seeing anyone for 3 weeks, I would probably be all right.
I think so. I think I would be too. I have a stack of books to keep myself busy.
Mm-hmm.
And then I probably would start writing. I don't have anything I want to write about right now, but like I like the idea of
having that.
So
yeah, I've done the same. It helped keep me occupied my rookie year up here.
Yeah.
I wrote some stuff, not anything that I'm like, oh, so proud of or that I want to share, but it was just fun at the time.
Yeah.
You know, why not? Let's do something else.
Speaking from the heart.
Let's talk about these rattlesnakes.
That's what I was
this tall grass.
All the romantic stuff.
It is like a Western movie up here that people kind of don't realize. I get a lot of touristy folks these days from Yellowstone, and they get up here and there's no trees, and it's very hot on the right day, and it's... there's like a hawk way overhead. It's 100 degrees. There's no wind, and it's dusty. And they're like, "What? Where the fuck am I?" Like, welcome to the Western movie.
Yeah, here it is. The real Yellowstone experience.
Yeah,
part of it.
Yeah, it's dry and hot, and a lot of folks don't realize it is a high desert.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, like here, and it's weird how it could be like pockets, like in Montana, right? And then we have like. You go up to the Kootenai, it's more like a rainforest.
Right.
You know, it's very strange. We got a very cool state.
So it might be interesting to see how those kind of climates or biomes impact your daily life if you were out in the wilderness by yourself, nothing to do, and with a low-density work fire season, right?
Yeah.
So if you have nothing to do, there's been no lightning, there's no clouds, there's no smoke columns, and every day you're like, I'm not looking out these binoculars for one more second. I don't care.
Yeah.
You would have drastically... I think you would probably have drastically different habits depending on climate, right?
Yeah.
I mean, up here in the heat of the summer, if it's a desert, you will chase shade and take naps.
Yeah, I bet.
I mean, you won't come inside for nothing unless you have to work.
Because it's so hot.
Yeah.
That's the thing with the big fishbowl.
It's a big fishbowl.
You can't see half it, but like, the whole thing is like this.
It's a big fishbowl, and then it sits on top of a concrete box. So if it's 100 degrees for... a day, it will stay 90-ish in here all night. And that means if you have a second 100-degree day, you won't spend a minute in here.
That ain't a hammock.
Yep, I've got one.
Yeah,
I brought one this year.
Have you ever messed with sourdough? You ever get into that? Like,
sorry?
Sourdough.
Oh my gosh. I can make a pretty killer French bread from scratch, but I have not made a sourdough yet.
Man, yeah, because that's what I think I'd start doing too. Like, the old lookout books. I'm in a book club.
Are you?
Yeah, Lookout Book Club. Idaho Fire Lookouts. Billy and Kat are the founders of that, and they go out and like tell lookout sites and new lookout sites.
Sure.
And I think they have kind of like a museum over there in Idaho. But we're having dinner, like an early dinner kind of in Missoula. We're talking about like different books we're reading, and we're just like, man, we should do a book club. And I was like, I don't know, I'm done, but man, if you guys want to, that'd be great because I'd definitely be a part of it. And so we started off with like some really old like lookout books, and that was kind of the theme, is all these people who had like come before the lookout writing book, you know, like during their training, even way back when, it was like, it's not for everybody.
Sure.
So, you know, you'll know within like the first week or two that it's not for you.
Yeah.
And even Trina Moyles, who has a great book, Lookout, and read that book, and she was on my podcast too. She's awesome. And a great author, and she was in her training in Canada, was the same deal. And she was in a really remote spot in the Boreal Forest.
Oh, man. That would be something else.
Yeah, so it's like, and so she has a really, and I never asked you this before, that's why I thought about it. Like, she had a really good routine, and really, she's really a descriptive writer, so she talks about all the different things that she went through, and like, in the highs and lows of her emotions, and all the things that she did to occupy her time, and then like, yeah, kind of, she survived out there, and thrived, really, more than survived, and
yeah.
It's really cool to read that, and then talk to her about it, too, and then we talked about coffee a little bit, wish I would ask her more questions, but, man, so coffee's like the staple of the outdoor world, man, you know? Yeah. I thought it was just fire, but it's like everybody, man.
I am currently running low. That bag over there has like maybe a cup left.
Oh,
so I've got a bunch of tea behind me somewhere that I'm...
Oh, yeah, tea. Also good.
Yep.
Especially on those colder nights in the shoulder season in the lookout.
So that's just nice, too, if I can wake up and have, you know, a tea instead, or to kind of hold me over between you and me and the rest of the world. I prefer coffee, I think. That's just kind of what I'm used to now, and I've just been drinking it for way too long.
Yeah, so you get a taste for it.
I do. But... I mean, I do enjoy tea as well, it is kind of that, where I enjoy it more in the afternoon, more in the evening, whatever.
I was going to say, the evening in Missoula tea, man, they're awesome. What is it, Montana Tea Traders, is that what it is?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I want to see them, right? Is that the
I believe so.
I want to give them a shout out. So Evening as well as the name of the tea, and it is
excellent. I could just be completely wrong. Be like, yeah. No, you got it.
Yeah, nailed it. It's somewhere in the ballpark, at least. Yeah, that's great tea. And the nice thing is, like, a warm, especially in the winter, or like, you know, like when it started to get cooler at night, it has no caffeine in it, has great flavor, and I think it might even have a little bit of chamomile in it, so it's like this nice relaxing. It's great before bed.
Oh, yeah.
Just in the evening, we're winding down.
So, I'm. Sometimes, again, between me, you, and the rest of the world, I will do a little escape from the lookout where I make the holy shit 2-hour drive into town in the middle of the night because I'm out of coffee. I don't have breakfast stuff. I don't have whatever. And I did not plan well. And now I don't have food. And if it's a couple days, it's fine. I can deal. I don't need to eat breakfast or a big breakfast or whatever. I don't need coffee for... No, I need coffee.
But like the little things, like,
yeah, the point is if I do get like ridiculously low on stuff where I'm like down to eating like MREs and like Mountain House, I'm like, okay, I'm not going to be doing this. So
that's why I took both those in so many different ways. Like,
but you can only do so much.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah, it's half hot sauce. I don't want to eat it.
Yeah, buddy Jason Hill, who jumped on a west, one day, and he's pretty quiet, dude. And man, we got along great, just super funny. And I'm like mixing up my Mountain House things, like chicken rice one.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And our baby stroganoff. Yeah, those two were like great.
Yeah.
And I was like going to work out, and he like started shaking the Idaho potato. I mean, the Idaho and instant potatoes.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I was like, it's already a big one, so it's already like a meal for two.
Oh yeah. Well, you're not gonna share.
Yeah, exactly. But I was going to eat that whole thing, and I was like, man, that's a lot. And he's like, just to make it better.
Yeah,
a little garlic potato. And so I added that whole thing, and it was nice. Oh, already kind of watered it down. And man, I was stuffed.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, it was great. But I mean, there's a few different things that we did, and eventually, it all starts tasting the same, you know.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you can only dump an orange drink mix on Spam and stuff that in a wildfire so many times.
True.
Oh, man. That's actually not bad.
Yeah, I was going to say, man, like, that was part of, like, the rookie initiation.
Oh, interesting.
And it's not like a forest thing. It's just, like, it's almost just part of the culture. It's almost like manners to, like, for the rookie to go and make their best Spam and then present it to everybody on a QB box tray and present it to the whole smoke jumpers.
Slice, sir.
Yeah, exactly. That's kind of what it is. And then people kind of rate the Spam and stuff. And so it's like part of the tradition. And it's super cool. And then, like, if it's, you know, sometimes it's like bigger where like Hellatech or Repellers or, you know, Mid District is up there too. And they kind of partake. And it's awesome, man. And dude, there's really good Spam that comes out of it. Like, this wasabi Spam, it's like garlic honey, I think, is what this one gal did. I mean, it was
that's interesting.
Yeah,
so
you'll bring ingredients with them, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I figured there wasn't a honey garlic drink mix out there.
Yeah, exactly. Just getting found their honey and
that poor bastard.
Yeah.
So my rookie year, I think it was late in season, like snow on the ground maybe, and we were burning piles out in the East Fork, and someone was talking about like little jumper hacks. And they're like, yeah, orange whatever Spam. And I was like, what the fuck are you talking about? Yeah. And I don't know why. We must have had lunches from somewhere. Everyone had these little Spams and the drink packs that you can find in every MRE.
Yep.
And a bunch of us, a bunch of rookies, me included, were just like, all right, let's try it. So everyone kind of did that. But instead of like, since it's not one rookie, it's a crew of rookies, we just tried each other's.
Yeah.
It was pretty cool. Man, everyone trying. I think one guy, it's like raspberry, cranberry, something like that drink mix. He used that. Most people used orange. I think one guy used lemon lime. That sucked. But yeah, it was just so funny to give that a try.
Yeah,
and then to have some surprisingly good ones.
Yeah.
Where it was like, you could eat this at home.
Oh, yeah. With a little nice Ritz cracker. Oh, it's choice. So good.
Look at this charcuterie board over here.
Yeah.
Look at these hors d'oeuvres.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, man. We're all filthy, you know? Like, this is great.
Black hands from soot, black face,
eating
snacks. Oh my gosh. That was the big joke, too. There used to be a restaurant right down behind us called the Rocky Knob, and it's got a lot of history in the valley. This used to be a big logging community. And that place used to be a brothel. along with a bar and stuff like that. Back at Outlawed years and years and years ago, it was a staple for a bar, though, and it did Wing Wednesdays, and they had drink specials, and they're like super friendly with the locals. At least twice a week, in come this big, dirty, loud group of firefighters who drink too much and they're too loud, but we would every single week attempt to order the most wings as a group. Like, that was the big joke.
Yeah.
Is we would bring the whole crew if we could, and everyone would order enough. It's like, what's the most wings someone's ordered today? It's like, well, this one group had 80, you know, between eight of them.
Yeah.
And the wings were like, they were grown in Area 51. They were huge. They were insane. You didn't need 10 of them, for sure.
Yeah.
But it was almost like a weird point of pride. Like, our ego got a little hurt. We're like, there's only 6 of us, but we can fucking do that.
Yeah, we got this.
We want 100.
Yeah. Please.
And they're a buck a piece, which sounds egregious until you see the size of them and you realize they're a chicken breast.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so we would constantly go in there. And it got to the point where our... our squad boss that year was kind of notorious for having a good time. It got to the point where if they would see his face, they would just put a bottle of whiskey down on the table and just like, yeah, whatever, we'll charge you for it, or we might not. And I was like, I didn't think this kind of shit happened anymore. I thought this was like in Western movies.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, the gunfighter comes in and his bottle's there waiting for him.
Yeah.
He's got a spot.
It was hilarious to see that and to actually be a part of it. But
yeah that's cool culture. Like, I mean, the drinking gets a little too crazy sometimes, but like, the rest of it though is pretty awesome, and that's why like people refer to the firefighters, and for folks listening who haven't been around the fire community as much, it is like a big family, because you do these events, right? You go and try stuff, and it's all like these, you know, typically younger kids that are just fresh out of high school, and they're like, yeah, let's do it, you know? And,
oh, yeah.
You know, it's a little fire season. That's kind of all you have for, like, excitement. So it's like...
oh, yeah, you're throwing Pulaskis at trees, and you're going to the bar, and it is that 18 to 24 crowd or whatever that is just... you have nothing but energy and time on a slow fire season, and you work all day together, and then you live together, so you end up doing all this stuff together. You really are. You become very close, especially in a secluded spot like this one.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah, you know, and then the next year, you know, most folks come back because of that, and then you get to like catch up, like see what they're doing in the off season, and then they come back usually in better shape, and you know, like, yeah, hopefully, yeah, it all goes well. Yeah, some of the first year people didn't get into it.
That was me.
Yeah, like I remember.
Oh, I was a clear cut case of that.
Oh, really?
Oh, I had never worn like heeled boots or anything like that before. And one of the first times I put them on was hiking that hill, Rymel. And it about killed me. And I wasn't very far into it. It was pretty embarrassing. I was probably only 5 minutes into the walk. And I remember our assistant looking at it. He's like, your feet killing you? I was like, yeah, why? He's like, I can tell.
Yeah, 10 foot.
You look real new at this.
And yeah.
I mean, because I had done the military thing. And I was like, I've worn boots before. It's not a big deal. No, not loggers.
Not the logger route, yeah.
You haven't hiked up a hill with a shitload of weight on your back in loggers. So, yeah, definitely being a case of that. And
well, yeah, it changes how you walk quite a bit, because like, so it's such a big heel. And then even today, while it's going downhill, I'm going to get the little heel, this guy. Yeah.
Skate shoes.
Yeah, I could definitely feel it. Like, man, miss having that big heel on, you know, like a white or a Nick, you know?
I was like, I don't know, mine are over there somewhere. But
yeah, yeah, they're wonderful. Shoot, now, I mean, this is a great podcast. I don't really want to cut it short.
But I was like, I'm happy to keep going. Are we dying?
Yeah, I'm just worried about that thing overheating, and kind of got dinner waiting on me.
Oh, shoot.
Was there another question I had for you? I don't remember what it was.
We had the podcast one. I get frustrated about... I don't know if I covered that.
No, just about like having to apply for this position every year instead of get rehire rights. Like a lot of
it gets a little frustrating just because my season's so short.
Yeah.
I don't know if that might be the cause of it, but I have to submit a lot of paperwork again. What feels like a fucking triplicate every year. I'm like, why am I doing this? You already know all of this information for a service. Why?
Yeah.
So that, it kind of chaps me a little bit, and having this lifelong, what seems like at this point, struggle with the government, where every step is painful, and the paperwork is painful. Last year, it kind of had me questioning, like, why do I do this to myself? why am I going through this for the okayest pay in the world? And I had to have a little moment with myself where it was like, look at the amount of enjoyment that I get out of this job. I very much like the community. I love this area. I fell in love with it the first time I saw it.
Yeah.
I mean, they can't get me to leave. it's something about this job continually brings me back.
Yeah. I think it's a connection that I think everybody has, and maybe they don't hear it as much because they haven't been in the outdoors as much. But like once you start, like I promise to anybody listening, if you, once you get your toe in the outdoors, it's going to keep pulling at you. And
it sucks you in.
It does, man. Because I mean, I grew up in Whitehall, but I wasn't really – I was camping and stuff. I had Boy Scouts, but it wasn't like I was really as involved in the forest as like working for the Forest Service. And
sure,
now I know all these plant and tree species and, you know, the fire ecology and what is – you know, helps, and especially in our forest, like what helps make our forest healthy, and like all these roads and all these areas and all these neat little spots and little microclimates like we were talking about earlier, and orchards, you know, like cool little orchards that have kind of been, some have been forgotten that are up the West Fork, you know, they're trying to save one right now, and like those cool things, and it gets in your blood, and you're like, because I think everyone at some point has that, and probably in every job, where it's like, is juice worth the squeeze? Like, this is
right.
Becoming more of a hassle, and I'm not making any more money, maybe, or it's just like...
I mean, if you're in the Forest Service, you're not making money, period.
Yeah.
So that's not what you're here for in the first place.
Yeah,
but
absolutely.
At the end of the day, you got to pay rent.
Yeah, you got to at least cover the bills, you know?
But yeah, what you mentioned is really actually fascinating in that way. I didn't know anything about like weather patterns, right? Clouds, weather patterns, anything like that. Becoming an FFT 1 Type 5 and having to like sit through all your different classes and then learning, talking to an actual weatherman from Missoula, that poor man, we were exhausted off of work. So him talking was like us trying our very best on the edges of our seats, like stay awake, stay awake, stay awake.
Exactly, absorb this.
Right. But some of the stuff he said was so profound, and understanding what his job was as a meteorologist and little stuff, right? I remember back in the days, like, for instance, one of the ones that stayed with me big time is you hear, like, 50% chance of rain. And my best friend's dad would always be like, that weatherman doesn't know what the fuck he's talking about. It poured all day. And back then, as a kid, you absorb that, and you're like, these weathermen are idiots.
Yeah.
And then learning, like, no, 50% of your area has rain.
Yeah.
It was like, oh, I'm the idiot.
Yeah, totally, yeah.
I didn't understand how this worked. Little stuff like that was profound to me, learning about weather patterns when I was a young dude, even. It was like,
yeah,
oh,
like,
damn.
Yeah, even predicting lightning.
Right,
know, like,
yeah.
When I first got in the forest, I was like, you can predict what the LAL is going to be.
What is this, wizardry?
Yeah, exactly. I know these things. Like, it's nuts. I mean, I know you can see, like, off the radar, you see a storm coming, but still, like, you can predict the lightning, what it's going to be, but it's, like, the heat, the convection, all these factors that come in, and, you know, whatever cell might be tracking across the U.S. So, a pretty good idea of what the lightning is going to be, and what is, like, LAL 3 for our areas, usually when things are going to be exciting.
Yeah,
three, right?
Generally. Yeah. I mean, two is like you have lightning activity, so.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah, I think our fuel pretty receptive on 2 and 3, I think, is. But it's weird how different areas are like that. Like, they have their numbers, and I remember it was like, what was it? LAL of 2, 80 degrees, and something else. I can't remember what the, like, three things were that were like, this equals out large fire activity on the bitter, and specifically in Stevensville, I think is where they're sitting. Like, I wish I remember the numbers because it's really interesting. So, like, on those days, I think we'd be in a fire weather watch anyways, but like, especially in Stevensville, we're like a little more like heightened. Like, all right, this is the potential is there, and then you can plan for it too. It's like,
sure,
in my head, I'm already thinking, like, if I go to a fire and I'm the engine boss or a crew boss or whatever, I'm already kind of thinking about my exit strategy and
as you should be.
Yeah, going from IC5 to IC4 to whatever, to IC3, you know, and like the steps. I'm already like pre-calculating those steps because on the early season it's like single tree lightning strike, 1/10 of an acre, you know, one engine maybe two, you know, just to help.
Two dudes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Two dudes. Yeah. Like, so. I'm gonna hit the road. But,
I got one last little quip for you. Deer Mountain wanted me to say hi, so Ellie says hello.
Oh, awesome.
And I was trying real hard to... She is the best.
Oh, man.
I was trying real hard to bait her into a joke. But it's so stupid. But I was like, oh, yeah, Luke from the SO is coming up. And she's like, cool, tell him I say hi. And I was so hoping anyone was going to ask why. So you'd be like, we're getting audited. They want to know about this hot tub I got out here. They want to know about the $5,000 charge on the district card. So hide your hot tubs, guys.
Yes.
So funny to me. So stupid to the rest of the world. But she would not for the life of me ask.
That's what? Well, yeah, she probably knows, well, she knows about the podcast. She probably just already seen, like, I was looking for an interview. Yeah, oh, man, she's so great. I remember last year, like, just, you know, normal stuff. Like, stress is kind of building up in my day, and I had a reason to go see her because I was supposed to give a tour, and I'd never been there before. So I was like, I should actually figure out what this is before I, like, try to show some new folks the forest.
Yeah.
Because you know, that's one of the only spots I had never been. So I went up by myself, you know, I called her, and was like, hey, Elliot, is it cool if I come up and meet you, and I'm also in her pants, so I kind of want to see how to get up there. She gave me some directions, you know, and it's Hamilton, not that hard, but it was great, man. Like, I figured I'd go up there, you know, in like 5 minutes, like, say hey, introduce myself, and,
right,
you know, talk for a little bit, and see you know, how long she's been up there, just some basic questions, and be like, all right, Ellie, cool, I'll let you know we're going to come back, but there might be a tour up this way, and we ended up, something happened, we never got back that way, but... I ended up spending like a half hour up there or longer. Just like, she brought me in and was like, hey, would you like to have a seat? And I had some water and we just talked, and she had some tea going and but the view, and I mean, I didn't want to leave. I was like,
yeah,
I got stuff to do, but I could just stay here all day and just hang out with you, Ellie. She was so cool.
It's immaculate.
Yeah. I mean, Deer Mountain, I mean, all the views are great. Like, they're all their own views, but the way Deer Mountain is like set farther west in the Sapphires,
yeah,
so it like, feels like you're almost in the Bitterroots. Like, it's, the view is just like the Bitterroots are right in your face.
Yep.
It's one of the best views I've been to in the Sapphires, at least, you know.
It's incredible.
Yeah. But, well, shoot, man, I appreciate you.
Yeah, likewise.
Yeah, I'm trying to think, like, we could definitely go do 2 hours, so maybe you're not here much longer, huh?
I've got like 10 more days.
I want to do a follow-up this winter because I don't know if I'll get back up here in 10 days. But
totally understandable. I know you got a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah. We were talking about doing one, like, you know, midwinter. So,
right?
We'll
I would love that.
Yeah.
I really want to make sure to get back over here for ski season. So
I was thinking, I was going
to
say.
Yeah. I would love to, if I was here for ski season, take some time.
Yeah, come back, you know, do some skiing Lost Trail. We can actually do a podcast in the Airstream. So.
Oh, yeah.
Because you haven't been in the Airstream yet, have you?
No. I was just thinking about that.
Yeah, and I was like, I was actually almost thinking about bringing it up here, and then thank God I didn't, because the road got even worse.
It's so bad. Dude,
oh,
it's so bad.
Man.
There was this tree down in the road the other day. I'm going to keep you here all day if I keep telling stories.
It's true. So, speaking to the tree.
Yeah.
thanks, everybody, for tuning in and listening. I appreciate it. Have a good night, everybody.